Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota. Mary Meyer is back with us. Mary, good morning to you.
Good morning, Denny. Great to hear your voice.
And yours as well. We always appreciate when you and your colleagues are on. Did you enjoy our summer season?
I did. However brief it was wonderful. And yeah, fantastic. I have a lot of things blooming in my garden, and as I'm sure many of our listeners do.
Yeah, it was a pleasant change. I saw a bunch of dragonflies already.
I'm hearing
it's going to be quite a crop of mosquitoes this year, so we'll have to see if that comes true. But in the meantime, if you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. We call it Smart Garden, and we are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Mary Meyer answering those lawn or garden type of questions this morning, either by phone or by text. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get this hour. So if you have that kind of a question, call us or text us right away, 651-461-9226. I'm a little concerned, I have to say, Mary. I'm looking out of my yard after the snow left us, and after this drought last summer, it looks kind of bad. I'm not sure. I always, you know, had a pretty good, you know, lawn, but it looks like it had been stressed, and of course, with our limitations on watering. How do we rescue this now? Is it a matter of reseeding, sodding? What do you think?
Well, it might be. You know, first of all, we have to be careful that, yes, you don't get on your lawn and do raking and walking and so on until it's sufficiently dry. So that means the snow has got to be gone from it and that it's not spongy at all when you walk on it. So once it's dry, you can. Raking is normally the first thing that I do in the springtime to remove any leaves or debris that's there. And sometimes I see on people's lawns now this year from the snow plows, there's actually a debris of soil and just leaves, whatever, left from snow plows. So you want to remove that as much as possible. And then, yes, if you have large areas, usually we think larger than the size of your foot, that are exposed soil, you want to think about reseeding those. Now, even though we've had some really hot days, the soil temperature is still quite cool. So it's going to be a while until crabgrass or any good lawn seed will germinate. But you can start thinking about getting that seed or seeding once the lawn has dried out enough to first rake it.
Yeah, now we're getting, at least in some parts, in this weekend, a rain. And it looks like a couple days this week as well. So, and moisture is good for sure. Again, we had, in fact, early this morning, we received a text. Mary, folks are anxious to get
get
some
going.
Yes. This one says this: good morning. I'm looking for a type of fertilizer to use on garlic, probably the organic type. Thank you for any ideas.
Yes, so garlic is normally kind of a what we think of as a heavy feeder, a plant that utilizes quite a bit of fertilizer. So, and if you want organic forms, there are some made specifically for garlic. And a lot of these are going to be composted manures, poultry manure, cow manure, things like that. But if it really is labeled as a fertilizer, it will have the three numbers on the bag, and you want to balance fertilizer. Probably the composted one is going to be something like 5-5-5 or maybe 9-4-5 or something like that. And any of those are good to use. You want to make sure that it is composted if it's poultry manure and not fresh, because that can burn plants. So you want it to make sure that it is composted. But there are some made specifically for garlic. And yes, just read the labels carefully, because if they say it's fertilizer, it will have those three numbers. And often organic sources are going to be a number below 10, which is fine. But the synthetic fertilizers are going to be the higher numbers and going to be faster release than usually the organic sources.
Mary, we're getting a lot of texts, well, some, about vole damage. You're saying this is quite a year for voles. Have you been hearing that as well?
Oh, not only hearing that, but seeing that. I mean, voles, rabbits, deer. We had such a snow cover. I cannot remember in my lifetime seeing the damage on wild plants, even sumac, that the bark is completely white. I mean, the bark has been removed, and what's there is this white stem of so many plants because of rabbits. Voles are usually down in the ground, tunneling around, eating at the crowns of plants. And voles are vegetarians. They will eat the herbaceous material predominantly. Rabbits, of course, a problem, but this voles like habitat cover. So once the snow is gone, they're going to be going into undercover somewhere again. So raking up, you know, cutting back grasses, if you have grasses or perennials, cutting those back at this time of year and reducing the amount of habitat hiding places really for these voles will help. And if you really have a large number, you can use baits because they're basically, voles are a kind of they look like field mice. So they're really very similar to mice. Basically, voles are a kind of they look like field mice. So they're really very similar to mice. So it's kind of using the same strategies that you would against mice.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing. Let's see. This texter says, I'm starting seeds using two types of grow bulbs, 5,000K and 2,600K. If I never want the plants to fruit, do I need both of them?
If you never want the plants to fruit, do you need both of them? Okay, I have to think through this question.
Yeah.
Yes, so that would be things like lettuce or something, if you don't want them to bolt, maybe, I think this person thinking. But basically, seed germination and getting plants to grow is fairly straightforward. And many of the traditional shop lights that you buy will provide enough light as long as you have that down close to where the seeds are. And then I would switch to sunlight after that, as soon as possible that you can get your plants up and as soon as the temperatures are suitable. And pretty soon they're going to be suitable for our cool season crops to really go outside or transition between inside at night and outside in the daytime. Once we consistently have temperatures in the 50s at nighttime, you can put a lot of the cool season things outside. So for seed germination, I think you're going to be fine with the bulbs that you've got, and then transition to sunlight as soon as possible.
Right, very good. Mary, hang on. We'll take a quick break, reminding our listeners they can call in or text in their lawn or garden question right now, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, we dropped yet another degree, 48, so it looks like we may have hit our high of 50 or 51 degrees earlier today. 48 our current temp, and as far as an overnight low, it's probably going to be, with some showers, near 34 tonight. And for your Sunday tomorrow, could be snow, highs near 39 degrees. You stay tuned. 830-WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. It's the 15th of April, and it is 48 degrees in the Twin Cities. With more rain and maybe a little snow on the way. You stay tuned to CCO. Denny Long here on this Saturday, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show. And as usual, Mary, we have many. So let's get back to it. Maybe a little bit later, I want to talk a little bit about the Arboretum, too, if we may. This one text says, good morning. I put down some dormant seed late last fall. Two questions, please. One, should the seed still be sitting on top of the soil after 90 inches of snow? I would have thought that it would have sunk into the soil a bit. And two, what can I do with a very hard soil that doesn't drain well? I've had my lawn aerated in the past. That does not seem to help. I will probably be doing a U of M soil test this spring. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad this person is doing the soil test. That's a great way to know what nutrients you have. You can also determine the amount of organic matter you have in your soil, because organic matter can make a difference in compacted soils. It will make the soil lighter. So adding organic matter is one way to change the hardness or the compactness of your soil. Back to the questions about the dormant seed. I assume this person can see the seed sitting there, because seed is often very grassy, light colored compared to our dark soil. So the person might see the seed sitting there. Yes, it should be there. Some of it will work down into the soil with freezing and thawing. It helps to work it down in the soil. If you could try raking it a little bit if you wanted to, if you thought you were seeing too much of it on top of the soil. The other thing you could try is putting down some type of a straw mulch that would help to keep the soil keep the seed in close contact with the soil. So I think I would go with actually putting on a light mulch rather than really worrying about raking it and disturbing the seed. But the germination won't happen yet because the soil is still too cold. Will soon, but not today.
Not today.
Yeah.
Happy spring, this texter says, because of insect use. When in the springtime is it safe to cut down last year's flower stalks, i.e. echinacea?
Well, we know that the insects do live in the flower stalks. I do this kind of as needed and when I can't stand the appearance anymore. And then I do try to leave 6 or 8 inches of the stalk there. So that hopefully, the other thing you can do is cut them off and just lay the stalks down. Because if the insects are in the stalk that you cut off, then they will come out on their own. So once we are consistently in warm conditions, which, you know, this is a little difficult in Minnesota, but I would say by mid-June. By mid-June, we consistently have warm temperatures, and most insects have come out of their life stage that will keep them dormant in the winter. So that by mid-June, you can do more of a major cleanup if that looks better for your garden.
Okay. The listener said we mentioned on the show, not exactly when, maybe it was last fall, I think they said, we mentioned, and I don't remember this, Mary, frost seeding. They want to know if we can elaborate more on that.
I think that's very similar to dormant seeding.
Yeah, probably.
Because what happens with a frost is that opens up the soil for the seed to go down in there. Now, this year, we didn't have a lot of that before we got snow cover, and so much snow cover that the soil tended to stay at more of one consistent temperature. But frost seeding, to me, is the same as dormant seeding.
Okay, very good. This listener says, does the soil used in outdoor flower pots and elevated vegetable gardens need to be changed, or can it be maintained through fertilizing the plants when watering or doing partial soil changes? If it should be changed, can the old soil be rehabilitated and used again in a few years?
This is a great question that I have wondered about myself for many, many years, and I've never seen any research on this. So over the years, I've kind of, you know, done my own research, and I reuse a lot of the soil in my containers, but I dump the containers out into a wheelbarrow or a large area. I completely remove the soil from the containers, and then I aerate it just in, you know, mix it up again with a shovel in my wheelbarrow. And I don't use totally what we call mineral soil or soil from the ground. I have a mixture of some mineral soil and some potting soil in there. And I find that the containers are really wet. Usually they're really wet soil, and then I have to leave the wheelbarrow just sit for a couple of days till it dries out. And then, depending on how it feels and looks, I try to remove all of the roots of the previous year's growth, just a plant debris itself, till I just really have soil. And then I put it back in the pots again. And over the years, I have replaced some of it with new potting soil, usually a peat-based mix, which is controversial, but that's wonderful for growing plants. And then sometimes I put in a little bit of mineral soil because that's the micronutrients that are not going to be in potting soil. So I've reused my soil over the years. Now, if you don't want to do that, or if you have disease issues, I try to remove the plant parts because that's where the disease can come from. If you don't want to reuse your container soil, I would recommend you put it in your compost pile.
Okay. You're going to have to help me with this. I'm not aware of new worms. Texter says, what type of damage do these new worms do, and is there a chemical treatment for them?
This is our newest nemesis is the jumping worms.
It's okay.
Really, yeah, so I think this person is referring to jumping worms. So jumping worms are our new understanding of the worms that are in our soils today. And while, you know, I'm so old that when I grew up, worms were great and everybody wanted more worms in their soil. But we have such a proliferation of the worms that we consider to be not native in our soil, but a lot of what's happened is we just have huge numbers of worms that are now consuming everything in sight, the duff in the forests, everything, so that they've reached such a point that they're devastating and really a detriment. So you have to be really careful if you're exchanging soil with neighbors and trading plants and so on. You can get these in your garden. Now, they're not going to start showing up until about mid-July because they are annuals and they grow from eggs each year. And so it takes a while for them to get get going. But being aware and looking for these in your soil and understanding what they look like, they're called jumping worms because they're extremely active. They're a normal size worm, but they jump around and they move once you touch them. And there are no chemicals or remedies that we can put on to really kill all of these worms. This is much more of a management issue with, it's really difficult not to get them because they're so ubiquitous, but how do you manage them and what kind of habitat will increase or decrease them in your garden? But of course, we have a lot of information on this up online at the extension.umn.edu website. We have worm monitoring groups that are taking place across the state, and you can read much, much more about this online.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it is such a great resource. If you're not familiar with it, and do check it out, you will be referring to it all the time, extension.umn.edu. A lot of work goes into that and a lot of great information. You're going to love it. extension.umn.edu. Mary, we'll need to take a break. Have a look at that format and a lot of great information. You're going to love it. extension.umn.edu. Mary, we'll need to take a break. Have a look at that forecast, whether we like it or not. We'll do that and then come back with about another half hour of our Smart Garden Show. So stay with us here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions this morning from Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. And Mary, as usual, we have many callers, many texters that we can help out this morning. I want to mention quickly that my wife and I did receive our new membership cards for the Arboretum.
Wonderful.
This past week. Yeah, and anxious to get out there once again. It's always such a fun thing. For those that don't know, and have never been there, trust me, when they do go, as you know, Mary, they'll be back. But we must, all of us, register online, right? Get online to reserve a spot, right?
Yes, that's right. We have implemented that new system, and it works really well. So we know, especially for big days where the weather's nice, there might be weddings going on or other events, that everyone can get in and have a place to park, etc. So registering online, very, very easy. There are hundreds of spots available on a half-hour basis, and you can easily see even the day of, the morning of, you can easily register. So that's an easy thing to do. And right now, the Arboretum has many things already blooming, all of the early spring bulbs and the wildflowers. You know, many people know the wildflower garden that we have is almost as old as the Arboretum itself. It was one of the first gardens put in, and the wildflowers come there before the leaves come out on the trees. So the early trillium is blooming, and then in the formal gardens, we have snowdrops, many of the crocus, the iris are blooming, passiflower, and so on. So fabulous place to visit for a walk. Yes, the Arboretum is really a treasure for us.
Excellent. Yeah, it is. I'm very anxious to get back out there again. I want to grab some phone calls, but first, this texter, is it a good time to trim evergreen bushes?
Yes, you can prune evergreens now. Unfortunately, my ewes look like the rabbits have already done a job on those. Never seen so much damage on ewes as I have this year with rabbits. But this time of year, yes, you can prune evergreens.
Excellent. Let's grab a phone call or two. Karen, I think, is first up here, calling from Maple Grove. Karen, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Hi, Mary. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just have a question. This year, I have noticed in my backyard many of the limbs on my trees. It seems like something is eating the bark off the trees, like they're completely stripped. Any idea of what that would be?
Oh, Karen, yes, you're describing what we are all now facing and looking at. So depending on how high up it is, it's probably rabbits or deer. Because this winter, because of the snow cover, lots of animals had difficulty finding food, and they resorted to eating anything, anywhere that they could reach. So I would just encourage you to wait and see how these plants look as time goes on this spring. And you'll be able to tell what's dead and alive after a few weeks. It's interesting that my forsythia is in full bloom right now. And it has been girdled by the rabbits. So what's happened is there's a certain amount of food reserve in those buds, enough for the actual flowers to bloom. But over time, there's going to be nothing because the pipeline with the nutrients coming up from the roots has been cut off by the girdling. So fortunately, I see the forsythia blooms, but I'm afraid a lot of my forsythia is actually going to be dead. So I will wait a couple of weeks and we'll see how it looks and then have to do some pruning to take off what's dead.
All right. This listener, we're going to grab, thanks, Karen. This listener said, I've heard about adding a layer of sand to the lawn to help revitalize it. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, we do see this on the golf courses. This is called our top dressing or a method to, yes, add some more soil. Now, we don't usually need to do this on a lawn, especially a home lawn, because hopefully people are cutting that at 3 to 4 inches tall. Yeah, if I know 4 inches, a little bit long, but 3 inches at least, because that helps ensure a good root system. But on a golf course, especially on a green, where this is like hanging on the edge here, like growing something so small for the recreation of golf, that they have to continually add soil to try to help to support that plant. But for the most part, for a home lawn, I would not think you need to do that.
All right. Let's take another phone call. Monica's calling in this morning, I think, from Bloomington. Monica, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Good morning to you. I just wanted to ask, we've got low-growing geraniums are as a border around my perennial garden, and the foliage is like this. I'm not sure of the variety, but the foliage is more like a very soft pine needle, short pine needle, and I've noticed now it's starting to go into my perennial garden, and I tried to pull some up last year. It's really kind of like really into the soil, and I don't know if it's going to be so invasive as to crawl over all my perennials, or if I have to like cut them off or just pull them out so they don't go more into my garden. Do you have any suggestions?
I think what you have, Monica, the perennial geraniums, I love these plants. These are one of our tough ground covers that will grow in drier sites, under trees, in difficult conditions. But they can be aggressive, as you are describing. And they have a great root system, really kind of stoloniferous root system. So the stems root, and they will make these trailing little plants over the ground. Yes, they can take over an area. So I started out with one or two of these beds, and I now have them wherever I want them because they are so easy to propagate, dig up, cut back, whatever. So yes, I would say you could probably do both. You can take your pruners and just hand prune them and cut them back, or you could even take a shovel and dig out an area to kind of reclaim that space for your perennials. But yes, what you're describing is a vigorous ground cover, the perennial geraniums. I love them. They're a fun plant to grow.
All right. This texter says, can I lay down the sod at this time? If not, when is a good time?
I think it's pretty early to be doing sod. You know, I was just looking at what the normal temperatures are for April, 56 to 34. So it's cool conditions, and our cool season grasses like these conditions. But I think the soil temperature is pretty cold. I would wait till the soil temperature is up in, more to the 50s and 60s, so the roots of the sod will start growing. So I'd wait a couple more weeks.
Patience. Okay.
Patience.
Yes. Is it necessary, listener says, to cut buds off a new peony plant this spring when planted as a bare root plant last spring?
Well, maybe. I would say that you're probably not going to get a lot of flowers on a bare root plant. The plant itself, maybe one. You might get one or maybe two at the most flowers. The bare root plant will probably need to be putting most of its energy into root establishment and then leaves. And so maybe if a bud is on there, it might be a tiny flower. But I don't think that's going to be your issue. I think the plant in and of itself will partition those reserves, so it puts its reserves into roots and leaves.
Oh, let's see. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. I was going to grab another text, but let's do this. I'm getting a signal. We need to take a break. So let's take a quick break. Just a reminder, coming along in the 9 o'clock hour, if you have any questions about decks, decking, porches, Luke Panic is going to be filling in for Andy Lindis. He is the deck and porch specialist at Lindis Construction. So if you have any type of questions about decks or porches for that matter, we welcome your texts or calls next hour. Stay with us here, News Talk 830 WCCO. For that matter, we welcome your texts or calls next hour. Stay with us here, News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, we welcome Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota answering those lawn and garden questions, of which there are many. I guess as we head into the growing season, that's to be expected every year. And by the way, we're around here with the show 52 weeks a year, just FYI. What about applying, texture says Mary, a pre-emergent? If it didn't go down last fall, when is a good time this spring?
It's still a little bit early to do pre-emergence because we're talking about emergence of crabgrass. That's the number one thing people use a pre-emergent chemical control for. Crabgrass is an annual in our lawns, and the seed sits out there, and as soon as the soil temperature is warm enough, the seeds germinate. Now, we often tie this to something like forsythia blooming, but we had such a weird week of summer after total winter that the soil temperature is not warm enough yet. Usually this is closer to Mother's Day typically, but basically I look online. There is a monitor online you could find with soil temperatures around the state, and you can also get a soil thermometer, which I have, and you can look for you could feel the soil and see how warm it is. So it's too cool yet, but I would say depending on the weather, around the 1st of May usually is a good time to think about putting it down. But it's all dependent on the temperatures we get and the soil temperature. And so we try to put it down before any seed will germinate.
Okay. This listener did not trim alpine currant shrubs before they recently budded out. Is there a particular time for this shrub?
Alpine currant, yeah, I usually think of that as one you can prune in the springtime. But, that is a tough plant. And so you could do pruning, if you're really considering the whole shape of the shrub, you could do it any time between now and mid-July. But knowing you are going to be cutting off some of the flowers or the buds, you can still do that in the springtime.
This texter, Mary, says, it is my understanding that bees may hibernate in stalks of hostas, etc. So last fall, I left my hosta stalks about 12 inches high. Well, now that we're in spring, how do I know the bees have left the stalk so I can rake the garden for new spring growth?
This is a question, yes, again, with what we're learning about insects and understanding about their life cycles and so on, they come out as the weather gets consistently warmer. So once it's consistently warmer, and unfortunately that's not till about mid-June for our climate, that's when you can really take the stalks off. You can cut them, however, if you cut them off and just lay them down, you won't be damaging the insects. So you can cut them off and just lay them down, and the insects will come out on their own.
Oh, okay. Good idea.
Yeah.
This listener says, a long question, most of our grass looks pretty good, but along the street we always get lots of weeds and crabgrass. I put down a lot of grass seed last year, so should we put crabgrass preventer only on the bad areas and then a weed and feed on the remainder?
Well, any crabgrass preventer you put down will kill the good seed. So you have to be really careful about doing that. Usually you do one or the other. You use crabgrass preventer or you seed, because the crabgrass preventer is going to kill the good seed as well as crabgrass. So you really have to make a call on that. I wouldn't do too much prevention at all with a crabgrass killer. I would, but it depends on what you've got there, you know, because you're not going to get good seed to come up at all if you use a crabgrass preventer.
Okay. This listener, Mary, says an amaryllis bulb has formed one seed pod. What do I do now?
Wow. One seed pod. Well, usually we don't want a seed pod on amaryllis because we'd rather the reserves, the food goes into making leaves, roots, and a flower for next year. So I would take the seed off. You know, I don't know anybody that's raised amaryllis from seed, although I'm sure people are doing this, but that really is, it's a whole different thing. And you're an amaryllis that produces seed will have less probability of flowering next year. So are you willing to, you know, throw away your amaryllis and grow something else from seed? Cut off the seeds. I'd cut off the seed pod.
All right. This listener is ready to give up on my backyard, he or she says. The grass is pretty overgrown with creeping Charlie and quackgrass. I cannot afford thousands of dollars to resod. Is there any other approach I could take? Maybe just let whatever grows grow.
Yes, I think I would do that. I mean, this person is considering cost as a factor, and if cost is a factor, really evaluate what is there. You can always buy some fine fescues. You can buy a bee lawn mix now at the store that's going to have white clover in it as well. And you can maintain these plants, clover, creeping Charlie, and fine fescues. You could cut them, you know, once a month and still have a low ground cover there that is not a pristine lawn, but it certainly will keep erosion down and will be attractive. So it's possible to do this with very little money. Yes.
Another lawn question, Mary. This listener says we have extensive snow mold on our lawn.
Oh, yeah.
What's the best way to revive the grass? What can you do about that?
You know, I personally have not had damage from snow mold, but it's amazing how much you can see it right now in the spring. I think what you should really do is think about raking that area. When it's dry enough, rake it and remove any of the debris that comes out. And if you have a fairly decent lawn, it will grow back on its own.
Okay.
Just rake it out, yeah.
This listener says, to what height and when should little blue stem ornamental grass be cut back?
You can cut back the grasses right now. And I usually cut them back about 6 inches or so, 4 to 6 inches down. Then I put the tops in the compost pile. So all the ornamental grasses can be cut back now. You can also, sometimes you could just rake out some of the fescues and so on. We'll just have a little bit of brown in them. You can rake it out, but the little blue stem, a warm season grass, you can cut that back right now.
I think we have time for another one here. Do you have any suggestions or precautions about using a raised box to grow vegetables and herbs?
This is a good idea. There's lots more, gives you a lot of growing space in areas where you might have poor soil or conditions that you just, an apartment or something where you want to grow something in a container. So raised boxes are a great idea. And the Hort Society, our Minnesota State Hort Society, northerngardener.org, has wonderful information on raised beds and community gardens as well. So they have put a lot of resources in how to make a raised bed or container gardens.
Mary, we are just about out of time. Let's do this. Let's mention again the university website. And, of course, we urge folks to get to the Arboretum. Well, as I said earlier, once you do, you want to go back again and again. But tell us about that U of M website.
extension.umn.edu. We have lots of resources up there, and the extension educators are always adding new timely information. If you have damage on plants from the rabbits, yes, we'll talk about that up there. Seeding in the springtime, what to prune in the springtime, and Arbor Day coming up. Arbor Day events at the Arboretum are coming up. Think about planting trees and adding tree diversity on your home landscape.
That's a great idea. Absolutely. And Mary, thank you so much for your help today, your expertise. We always have fun doing it, and we'll do this again, I know.
Always a pleasure, Denny. Fun to talk about gardening.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mary. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota on our Smart Garden Show. We'll be back, of course, again next Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your questions. I know we tend to get very busy. We appreciate your patience. Now, get those deck questions, any kind of a home improvement question, actually, coming along next hour on our Home Improvement Show. Luke Panik will be filling in for Andy Lindis. He is the deck and porch specialist. So any kind of deck or porch questions, bring it along next hour here on News Talk 830.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota. Mary Meyer is back with us. Mary, good morning to you.
Good morning, Denny. Great to hear your voice.
And yours as well. We always appreciate when you and your colleagues are on. Did you enjoy our summer season?
I did. However brief it was wonderful. And yeah, fantastic. I have a lot of things blooming in my garden, and as I'm sure many of our listeners do.
Yeah, it was a pleasant change. I saw a bunch of dragonflies already.
Oh,
and
I'm
hearing it's going to be quite a crop of mosquitoes this year. So we'll have to see if that comes true. But in the meantime, if you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. We call it Smart Garden, and we are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Mary Meyer answering those lawn or garden type of questions this morning, either by phone or by text. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get this hour. So if you have that kind of a question, call us or text us right away, 651-461-9226. I'm a little concerned, I have to say, Mary. I'm looking out at my yard after the snow left us, and after this drought last summer, it looks kind of bad. I'm not sure. I always, you know, had a pretty good, you know, lawn, but it looks like it had been stressed, and of course, with our limitations on watering. How do we do? How do we rescue this now? Is it a matter of reseeding, sodding? What do you think?
Well, it might be. You know, first of all, we have to be careful that, yes, you don't get on your lawn and do raking and walking and so on until it's sufficiently dry. So that means the snow has got to be gone from it and that it's not spongy at all when you walk on it. So once it's dry, you can. Raking is normally the first thing that I do in the springtime to remove any leaves or debris that's there. And sometimes I see on people's lawns now this year from the snow plows, there's actually a debris of soil and leaves, whatever, left from snow plows. So you want to remove that as much as possible. And then, yes, if you have large areas, usually we think larger than the size of your foot, that are exposed soil, you want to think about reseeding those. Now, even though we've had some really hot days, the soil temperature is still quite cool. So it's going to be a while until crabgrass or any good lawn seed will germinate. But you can start thinking about getting that seed or seeding once the lawn has dried out enough to first rake it.
Yeah, now we're getting, at least in some parts, in this weekend, a rain. And it looks like
yes,
a couple days this week as well. So, and moisture is good for sure. Again, we had, in fact, early this morning, we received a text. Mary, folks are anxious to
get
some
going.
Yes. This one says this: good morning. I'm looking for a type of fertilizer to use on garlic, probably the organic type. Thank you for any ideas.
Yes, so garlic is normally kind of what we think of as a heavy feeder, a plant that utilizes quite a bit of fertilizer. So, and if you want organic forms, there are some made specifically for garlic. And a lot of these are going to be composted manures, poultry manure, cow manure, things like that. But if it really is labeled as a fertilizer, it will have the three numbers on the bag. And you want to balance fertilizer. Probably the composted one is going to be something like 5-5-5 or maybe 9-4-5 or something like that. And any of those are good to use. You want to make sure that it is composted if it's poultry manure and not fresh, because that can burn plants. So you want it to make sure that it is composted. But there are some made specifically for garlic. And yes, just read the labels carefully, because if they say it's fertilizer, it will have those three numbers. And often organic sources are going to be a number below 10, which is fine. But the synthetic fertilizers are going to be the higher numbers and going to be faster release than usually the organic sources.
Man, we're getting a lot of texts, well, some, about vole damage. You're saying this is quite a year for voles. Have you been hearing that as well?
Oh, not only hearing that, but seeing that. I mean, voles, rabbits, deer. We had such a snow cover. I cannot remember in my lifetime seeing the damage on wild plants, even sumac, that his the bark is completely white. I mean, the bark has been removed, and what's there is this white stem of so many plants because of rabbits. Voles are usually down in the ground, tunneling around, eating at the crowns of plants. And voles are vegetarians. They will eat the herbaceous material predominantly. Rabbits, of course, a problem, but this voles like habitat cover. So once the snow is gone, they're going to be going into undercover somewhere again. So raking up, you know, cutting back grasses, if you have grasses or perennials, cutting those back at this time of year and reducing the amount of habitat, hiding places really for these voles will help. And if you really have a large number, you can use baits because they're basically, voles are a kind of they look like field mice. So they're really very similar to mice. Basically, voles are a kind of they look like field mice. So it's kind of using the same strategies that you would against mice.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing. Let's see. This texture says, I'm starting seeds using two types of grow bulbs, 5,000K and 2,600K. If I never want the plants to fruit, do I need both of them?
If you never want the plants to fruit, do you need both of them? Okay, I have to think through this question.
Yeah.
Yes, so that would be things like lettuce or something, if you don't want them to bolt, maybe, I think this person thinking. But basically, seed germination and getting plants to grow is fairly straightforward, and many of the traditional shop lights that you buy will provide enough light as long as you have that down close to where the seeds are. And then I would switch to sunlight after that, as soon as possible, that you can get your plants up, and as soon as the temperatures are suitable, and pretty soon they're going to be suitable for our cool season crops to really go outside or transition between inside at night and outside in the daytime. Once we consistently have temperatures in the 50s at nighttime, you can put a lot of the cool season things outside. So for seed germination, I think you're going to be fine with the bulbs that you've got, and then transition to sunlight as soon as possible.
All right, very good. Mary, hang on. We'll take a quick break, reminding our listeners they can call in or text in their lawn or garden question right now, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, we dropped yet another degree, 48, so it looks like we may have hit our high of 50 or 51 degrees earlier today. 48 our current temp, and as far as an overnight low, it's probably going to be, with some showers, near 34 tonight. And for your Sunday tomorrow, could be snow, highs near 39 degrees. You stay tuned. 830 WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. It's the 15th of April, and it is 48 degrees in the Twin Cities. With more rain and maybe a little snow on the way. You stay tuned to CCO. Denny Long here on this Saturday, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show. And as usual, Mary, we have many. So let's get back to it. Maybe a little bit later, I want to talk a little bit about the Arboretum, too, if we may. This one text says, good morning. I put down some dormant seed late last fall. Two questions, please. One, should the seed still be sitting on top of the soil after 90 inches of snow? I would have thought that it would have sunk into the soil a bit. And two, what can I do with a very hard soil that doesn't drain well? I've had my lawn aerated in the past. That does not seem to help. I will probably be doing a U of M soil test this spring. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad this person is doing the soil test. That's a great way to know what nutrients you have. You can also determine the amount of organic matter you have in your soil, because organic matter can make a difference in compacted soils. It will make the soil lighter. So adding organic matter is one way to change the hardness or the compactness of your soil. Back to the questions about the dormant seed. I assume this person can see the seed sitting there, because seed is often very grassy, light colored compared to our dark soil. So the person might see the seed sitting there. Yes, it should be there. Some of it will work down into the soil with freezing and thawing. It helps to work it down in the soil. If you could try raking it a little bit if you wanted to, if you thought you were seeing too much of it on top of the soil. The other thing you could try is putting down some type of a straw mulch that would help to keep the soil keep the seed in close contact with the soil. So I think I would go with actually putting on a light mulch rather than really worrying about raking it and disturbing the seed. But the germination won't happen yet because the soil is still too cold. Will soon, but not today.
Not today.
Yeah.
Happy spring, this texter says, because of insect use. When in the springtime is it safe to cut down last year's flower stalks, i.e. echinacea?
Well, we know that the insects do live in the flower stalks. I do this kind of as needed and when I can't stand the appearance anymore. And then I do try to leave 6 or 8 inches of the stalk there. So that hopefully, the other thing you can do is cut them off and just lay the stalks down. Because if the insects are in the stalk that you cut off, then they will come out on their own. So once we are consistently in warm conditions, which, you know, this is a little difficult in Minnesota, but I would say by mid-June, we consistently have warm temperatures, and most insects have come out of their life stage that will keep them dormant in the winter. So that by mid-June, you can do more of a major cleanup if that looks better for your garden.
Okay. The listener said, we mentioned on the show, not exactly when, maybe it was last fall, I think they said, we mentioned, and I don't remember this, Mary, frost seeding. They want to know if we can elaborate more on that.
I think that's very similar to dormant seeding.
Yeah, probably.
Because what happens with a frost is that opens up the soil for the seed to go down in there. Now, this year, we didn't have a lot of that before we got snow cover, and so much snow cover that the soil tended to stay at more of one consistent temperature. But frost seeding, to me, is the same as dormant seeding.
Okay, very good. This listener says, does the soil used in outdoor flower pots and elevated vegetable gardens need to be changed, or can it be maintained through fertilizing the plants when watering or doing partial soil changes? If it should be changed, can the old soil be rehabilitated and used again in a few years?
This is a great question that I have wondered about myself for many, many years, and I've never seen any research on this. So over the years, I've kind of, you know, done my own research, and I reuse a lot of the soil in my containers, but I dump the containers out into a wheelbarrow or a large area. I completely remove the soil from the containers, and then I aerate it just in, you know, mix it up again with a shovel in my wheelbarrow. And I don't use totally what we call mineral soil or soil from the ground. I have a mixture of some mineral soil and some potting soil in there. And I find that the containers are really wet usually they're really wet in the soil, and then I have to leave the wheelbarrow just sit for a couple of days till it dries out. And then depending on how it feels and looks, I try to remove all of the roots of the previous year's growth, just a plant debris itself, till I just really have soil. And then I put it back in the pots again. And over the years, I have replaced some of it with new potting soil, usually a peat-based mix, which is controversial, but that's wonderful for growing plants. And then sometimes I put in a little bit of mineral soil, because that's the micronutrients that are not going to be in potting soil. So I've reused my soil over the years. Now, if you don't want to do that, or if you have disease issues, I try to remove the plant parts, because that's where the disease can come from. If you don't want to reuse your container soil, I would recommend you put it in your compost pile.
Okay. You're going to have to help me with this. I'm not aware of new worms. Texter says, what type of damage do these new worms do, and is there a chemical treatment for them?
This is our newest nemesis is the jumping worms. So I think this person is referring to jumping worms. So jumping worms are our new understanding of the worms that are in our soils today. And while, you know, I'm so old that when I grew up, worms were great and everybody wanted more worms in their soil. But we have such a proliferation of the worms that we consider to be not native in our soil, but a lot of what's happened is we just have huge numbers of worms that are now consuming everything in sight, the duff in the forests, everything, so that they've reached such a point that they're devastating and really a detriment. So you have to be really careful if you're exchanging soil with neighbors and trading plants and so on. You can get these in your garden. Now, they're not going to start showing up until about mid-July, because they are annuals and they grow from eggs each year. And so it takes a while for them to get going. But being aware and looking for these in your soil and understanding what they look like, they're called jumping worms because they're extremely active. They're a normal size worm, but they jump around and they move once you touch them. And there are no chemicals or remedies that we can put on to really kill all of these worms. This is much more of a management issue with, it's really difficult not to get them because they're so ubiquitous, but how do you manage them, and what kind of habitat will increase or decrease them in your garden? But of course, we have a lot of information on this up online at the extension.umn.edu website. We have worm monitoring groups that are taking place across the state, and you can read much, much more about this online.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because it is such a great resource. If you're not familiar with it, and do check it out, you will be referring to it all the time, extension.umn.edu. A lot of work goes into that, and a lot of great information. You're going to love it. extension.umn.edu. Mary, we'll need to take a break. Have a look at that format, and a lot of great information. You're going to love it. extension.umn.edu. Mary, we'll need to take a break. Have a look at that forecast, whether we like it or not. We'll do that and then come back with about another half hour of our Smart Garden Show. So stay with us here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions this morning from Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. And Mary, as usual, we have many callers, many texters that we can help out this morning. I did mention quickly that my wife and I did receive our new membership cards for the Arboretum.
this
past week. Yeah, and anxious to get out there once again. It's always such a fun thing. For those that don't know, and have never been there, trust me, when they do go, as you know, Mary, they'll be back. But we must, all of us, register online, right? Get online to reserve a spot, right?
Yes, that's right. We have implemented that new system, and it works really well. So we know, especially for big days where the weather's nice, there might be weddings going on or other events, that everyone can get in and have a place to park, etc. So registering online, very, very easy. There are hundreds of spots available on a half-hour basis, and you can easily see even the day of, the morning of, you can easily register. So that's an easy thing to do. And right now, the Arboretum has many things already blooming, all of the early spring bulbs and the wildflowers. You know, many people know the wildflower garden that we have is almost as old as the Arboretum itself. It was one of the first gardens put in, and the wildflowers come there before the leaves come out on the trees. So the early trillium is blooming, and then in the formal gardens, we have snowdrops, many of the crocus, the iris are blooming, passiflower, and so on. So fabulous place to visit for a walk. Yes, the Arboretum is really a treasure for us.
Excellent. Yeah, it is. Okay. Very anxious to get back out there again. I want to grab some phone calls, but first, this texter, is it a good time to trim evergreen bushes?
Yes, you can prune evergreens now. Unfortunately, my ewes look like the rabbits have already done a job on those. Never seen so much damage on ewes as I have this year with rabbits. But this time of year, yes, you can prune evergreens.
Excellent. Let's grab a phone call or two. Karen, I think, is first up here, calling from Maple Grove. Karen, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Hi, Mary. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just have a question. This year, I have noticed in my backyard many of the limbs on my trees. It seems like something is eating the bark off the trees, like they're completely stripped. Any idea of what that would be?
Oh, Karen, yes, you're describing what we are all now facing and looking at. So depending on how high up it is, it's probably rabbits or deer. Because this winter, because of the snow cover, lots of animals had difficulty finding food, and they resorted to eating anything, anywhere that they could reach. So I would just encourage you to wait and see how these plants look as time goes on this spring. And you'll be able to tell what's dead and alive after a few weeks. It's interesting that my forsythia is in full bloom right now, and it has been girdled by the rabbits. So what's happened is there's a certain amount of food reserve in those buds, enough for the actual flowers to bloom. But over time, there's going to be nothing because the pipeline with the nutrients coming up from the roots has been cut off by the girdling. So fortunately, I see the forsythia blooms, but I'm afraid a lot of my forsythia is actually going to be dead. So I will wait a couple of weeks and we'll see how it looks and then have to do some pruning to take off what's dead.
All right. This listener, we're going to grab, thanks, Karen. This listener said, I've heard about adding a layer of sand to the lawn to help revitalize it. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, we do see this on the golf courses. This is called our top dressing, or a method to, yes, add some more soil. Now, we don't usually need to do this on a lawn, especially a home lawn, because hopefully people are cutting that at 3 to 4 inches tall. Yeah, if I know, 4 inches a little bit long, but 3 inches at least, because that helps ensure a good root system. But on a golf course, especially on a green, where this is like hanging on the edge here, like growing something so small for the recreation of golf, that they have to continually add soil to try to help to support that plant. But for the most part, for a home lawn, I would not think you need to do that.
All right. Let's take another phone call. Monica's calling in this morning, I think, from Bloomington. Monica, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Good morning to you.
I just wanted to ask, we've got low growing geraniums as a border around my perennial garden, and the foliage is like this, I'm not sure of the variety, but the foliage is more like a very soft pine needle, short pine needle. And I've noticed now it's starting to go into my perennial garden, and I tried to pull some up last year. It's really kind of like really into the soil, and I don't know if it's going to be so invasive as to crawl over all my perennials, or if I have to like cut them off or just pull them out so they don't go more into my garden. Do you have any suggestions?
I think what you have, Monica, the perennial geraniums, I love these plants. These are one of our tough ground covers that will grow in drier sites, under trees, in difficult conditions. But they can be aggressive, as you are describing. And they have a great root system, really kind of stoloniferous root system. So the stems root, and they will make these trailing little plants over the ground. Yes, they can take over an area. So I started out with one or two of these beds, and I now have them wherever I want them because they are so easy to propagate, dig up, cut back, whatever. So yes, I would say you could probably do both. You can take your pruners and just hand prune them and cut them back, or you could even take a shovel and dig out an area to kind of reclaim that space for your perennials. But yes, what you're describing is a vigorous ground cover, the perennial geraniums. I love them. They're a fun plant to grow.
All right. This texter says, can I lay down the sod at this time? If not, when is a good time?
I think it's pretty early to be doing sod. You know, I was just looking at what the normal temperatures are for April, 56 to 34. So it's cool conditions, and our cool season grasses like these conditions. But I think the soil temperature is pretty cold. I would wait till the soil temperature is up in, you know, more to the 50s and 60s. So the roots of the sod will start growing. So I'd wait a couple more weeks.
Patience. Okay.
Patience.
Yes. Is it necessary, listener says, to cut buds off a new peony plant this spring when planted as a bare root plant last spring?
Well, maybe. I would say that you're probably not going to get a lot of flowers on a bare root plant. The plant itself, maybe one. You might get one or maybe two at the most flowers. The bare root plant will probably need to be putting most of its energy into root establishment and then leaves. And so maybe if a bud is on there, it might be a tiny flower. But I don't think that's going to be your issue. I think the plant in and of itself will partition those reserves, so it puts its reserves into roots and leaves.
Oh, let's see. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. I was going to grab another text, but let's do this. I'm getting a signal. We need to take a break. So let's take a quick break. Just a reminder, coming along in the 9 o'clock hour, if you have any questions about decks, decking, porches, Luke Panic is going to be filling in for Andy Lindis. He is the deck and porch specialist at Lindis Construction. So if you have any type of questions about decks or porches for that matter, we welcome your texts or calls next hour. Stay with us here. News Talk 830 WCCO. For that matter, we welcome your texts or calls next hour. Stay with us here. News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, we welcome Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota answering those lawn and garden questions, of which there are many. I guess as we head into the growing season, that's to be expected every year. And by the way, we're around here with the show 52 weeks a year, just FYI. What about applying, texter says Mary, a pre-emergent? If it didn't go down last fall, when is a good time this spring?
It's still a little bit early to do pre-emergence because we're talking about emergence of crabgrass. That's the number one thing people use a pre-emergent chemical control for. Crabgrass is an annual in our lawns, and the seed sits out there, and as soon as the soil temperature is warm enough, the seeds germinate. Now, we often tie this to something like forsythia blooming, but we had such a weird week of summer after total winter that the soil temperature is not warm enough yet. Usually this is closer to Mother's Day typically, but basically I look online. There is a monitor online you could find with soil temperatures around the state, and you can also get a soil thermometer, which I have, and you can look for you could feel the soil and see how warm it is. So it's too cool yet, but I would say depending on the weather, around the 1st of May usually is a good time to think about putting it down. But it's all dependent on the temperatures we get and the soil temperature. And so we try to put it down before any seed will germinate.
Okay. This listener did not trim alpine currant shrubs before they recently budded out. Is there a particular time for this shrub?
Alpine currant, yeah, I usually think of that as one you can prune in the springtime. But, that is a tough plant. And so you could do pruning, if you're really considering the whole shape of the shrub, you could do it any time between now and mid-July. But knowing you are going to be cutting off some of the flowers or the buds, you can still do that in the springtime.
This texter, Mary, says, it is my understanding that bees may hibernate in stalks of hostas, etc. So last fall, I left my hosta stalks about 12 inches high. Well, now that we're in spring, how do I know the bees have left the stalk so I can rake the garden for new spring growth?
This is a question, yes, again, with what we're learning about insects and understanding about their life cycles and so on. They come out as the weather gets consistently warmer. So once it's consistently warmer, and unfortunately that's not till about mid-June for our climate, that's when you can really take the stalks off. You can cut them, however, if you cut them off and just lay them down, you won't be damaging the insects. So you can cut them off and just lay them down, and the insects will come out on their own.
Oh, okay. Good idea.
Yeah.
This listener says, a long question, most of our grass looks pretty good, but along the street we always get lots of weeds and crabgrass. I put down a lot of grass seed last year, so should we put crabgrass preventer only on the bad areas and then a weed and feed on the remainder?
Well, any crabgrass preventer you put down will kill the good seed. So you have to be really careful about doing that. Usually you do one or the other. You use crabgrass preventer or you seed, because the crabgrass preventer is going to kill the good seed as well as crabgrass. So you really have to make a call on that. I wouldn't do too much prevention at all with a crabgrass killer. I would, but it depends on what you've got there, because you're not going to get good seed to come up at all if you use a crabgrass preventer.
Okay. This listener, Mary, says, an amaryllis bulb has formed one seed pod. What do I do now?
Wow. One seed pod. Well, usually we don't want a seed pod on amaryllis because we'd rather the food goes into making leaves, roots, and a flower for next year. So I would take the seed off. I don't know anybody that's raised amaryllis from seed, although I'm sure people are doing this, but that really is, it's a whole different thing. And an amaryllis that produces seed will have less probability of flowering next year. So are you willing to, you know, throw away your amaryllis and grow something else from seed? Cut off the seeds. I'd cut off the seed pod.
All right. This listener's ready to give up on my backyard, he or she says. The grass is pretty overgrown with creeping Charlie and quackgrass. I cannot afford thousands of dollars to re-sod. Is there any other approach I could take? Maybe just let whatever grows grow.
Yes, I think I would do that. I mean, this person is considering costs as a factor, and if cost is a factor, really evaluate what is there. You can always buy some fine fescues. You can buy a bee lawn mix now at the store that's going to have white clover in it as well. And you can maintain these plants, clover, creeping Charlie, and fine fescues. You could cut them, you know, once a month and still have a low ground cover there that is not a pristine lawn, but it certainly will keep erosion down and will be attractive. So it's possible to do this with very little money. Yes.
Another lawn question, Mary. This listener says, we have extensive snow mold on our lawn.
Oh, yeah.
What's the best way to revive the grass? What can you do about that?
You know, I personally have not had damage from snow mold, but it's amazing how much you can see it right now in the spring. I think what you should really do is think about raking that area. When it's dry enough, rake it and remove any of the debris that comes out. And if you have a fairly decent lawn, it will grow back on its own.
Okay.
Just rake it out, yeah.
This listener says, to what height and when should little blue stem ornamental grass be cut back?
You can cut back the grasses right now. And I usually cut them back about 6 inches or so, 4 to 6 inches down. Then I put the tops in the compost pile. So all the ornamental grasses can be cut back now. You can also, sometimes you could just rake out some of the fescues and so on. We'll just have a little bit of brown in them. You can rake it out, but the little blue stem, a warm season grass, you can cut that back right now.
I think we have time for another one here. Do you have any suggestions or precautions about using a raised box to grow vegetables and herbs?
This is a good idea. There's a lot more, gives you a lot of growing space in areas where you might have poor soil or conditions that you just, an apartment or something where you want to grow something in a container. So raised boxes are a great idea. And the Hort Society, our Minnesota State Hort Society, northerngardener.org, has wonderful information on raised beds and community gardens as well. So they have put a lot of resources in how to make a raised bed or container gardens.
Mary, we are just about out of time. Let's do this. Let's mention again the university website. And, of course, we urge folks to get to the Arboretum. Well, as I said earlier, once you do, you want to go back again and again. But tell us about that U of M website.
extension.umn.edu. We have lots of resources up there, and the extension educators are always adding new timely information. If you have damage on plants from the rabbits, yes, we'll talk about that up there. Seeding in the springtime, what to prune in the springtime, and Arbor Day coming up. Arbor Day events at the Arboretum are coming up. Think about planting trees and adding tree diversity on your home landscape.
That's a great idea. Absolutely. And Mary, thank you so much for your help today, your expertise. We always have fun doing it, and we'll do this again, I know.
Always a pleasure, Denny. Fun to talk about gardening.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mary. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota on our Smart Garden Show. We'll be back, of course, again next Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your questions. I know we tend to get very busy. We appreciate your patience. Now, get those deck questions, any kind of a home improvement question, actually, coming along next hour on our Home Improvement Show. Luke Panik will be filling in for Andy Lindis. He is the deck and porch specialist. So any kind of deck or porch questions, bring it along next hour here on News Talk 830.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.